Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You will be on the Blog Talk Radio site at that time. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the Follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as topic suggestions for future programs. Go to usliftingus.com. You can reach the Ulu community with the members-only portal. When you register for the Ulu community, please use the same name you used to join Ulu. I'm Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Ongti. Tonight's topic is, are you ready for transformation? Peace, Brother Ongti. How are you doing tonight?
Peace, Sister Q. I'm fired up, and as Kwame Ture would say, ready for revolution. Good to hear you tonight. Oh. Good to be with you. Good to be with the Ulu family.
It's good to have you here. We're looking forward to tonight's discussion. So, Brother Ongti, what do you mean when you use the word transformation?
Thank you. And I'm asking the question, not only are we ready for transformation, and are you ready for transformation? And by that, I mean metamorphosis. In other words, the best example that nature gives us on this is the caterpillar transitioning into a butterfly. That's what I mean when I say transformation, a significant and radical shift in our consciousness, in our behavior, in our very being. And that's what's going to be necessary to address the problems confronting us as we are on the air tonight. It seems to me, Sister Q, that as I'm watching the 6 o'clock news, it is very clear that our world is yearning for revolution. Now, we're talking about transformation because I'm wondering why we can't get to transformation. And the problem is that the world is looking for revolution, and revolution is necessary before we can get to transformation. So we want to be clear that we are ready for revolution. We are presenting a revolutionary program as a way to get to transformation. So the world is yearning for revolution, yet revolution is not coming yet. Our people are desperate for revolution, yet revolution is not coming soon enough. And even Mother Nature is crying for revolution, yet revolution isn't coming, at least not yet. And why not? Because we, the people who need revolution the most, who hold the power to make revolution tomorrow, have not decided we deserve a different and better world, and also have not decided to fight to build that better world for ourselves and our children. And it seems to me, Sister Q, that, go ahead.
I was going to say, when you say the people, I think people are afraid of the word revolution, as they think they might get hurt. I don't know if there is such a thing as the revolution must be inside the person first. They must revolutionize themselves, their thinking, and that can be done in a way that they don't have to have so much fear. Is that something you're talking about?
I would agree with that. I would agree with that 100%. The revolution must first occur internally before it can express externally. And yes, it is fear that holds us back from taking the steps necessary to change in a very fundamental way the reality that we find ourselves living in. To fundamentally change the world, we must replace the current economic system of capitalism, which is the private ownership of the means of production, with a system of cooperative economics, which is community ownership of the means of production. Whoever controls the means of production controls reality for the world. And for the last 300-400 years, the means of production have been privately owned and controlled, and that is why people who are looking for a raise have to beg their employers to move their wages up to whatever amount they grant them. So here we are in 2023, and the federal minimum wage is still $7.25 an hour. That is abominable. That is, words can't begin to describe how egregious that is. And yet, when people organize and fight for a living wage of $15 an hour, some people think that that's asking too much. And so, in order to bring about the kind of radical change in reality and in the economic sphere, because until we change that, we don't change anything. We can vote all day long, put this politician in office and that politician in office, take that politician out of office, take the other politician out of office. But the fundamental structures that guide the way human activity is organized on the planet do not change. And that is where the problem is. We have to change the economic system. And yes, that is a frightening prospect to consider. And yes, to your point, Sister Q, the shift in thinking first has to happen in our minds. And when we become convinced of A, the absolute necessity of this change, and B, the absolute correctness of this change, and C, that this indeed is how human beings are supposed to live without a doubt, when we reach that point, then we will begin to change our behavior in ways that bring us to the place where we can get our hands on the economic structure and fundamentally change it. So
I think, Brother,
go ahead.
Now, as you were saying that, I was thinking about you talking about the means of production and how certain people are rich and certain people are, you know, don't have enough. And I saw an article yesterday or the day before where the president of, I think it's Shell, got a $7 million raise last year, and then they talk about how many people are having their power shut off because they can't afford to pay the bill. So
absolutely,
that is a dramatic example, and he's not the only one. That's just the one that was mentioned in the article I saw. But that happens all the time. People are, you know, worrying about, can they pay their heating bill? Can they afford to eat? Can they afford their medicines? And the people who run these companies get a multi-million-dollar raise from year to year. So, and they're already
absolutely
making millions of dollars anyway. So, you know,
absolutely,
don't give them a raise and,
right,
and cancel out all the bills for the people that can't afford to pay it. But that sounds too much like right, you know?
You're so correct. And that income inequality is not based on the fact that these CEOs are so much smarter and they work so much harder than the people who work in their companies. No, the reason that they are able to have those kinds of salaries is because they are withholding the value and the wealth that the workers in those companies have created. So it really is a system of grand theft larceny. I mean, it's criminal on so many levels. But again, going back to your comment about we are afraid to challenge the system and take what is rightfully ours, it's the conditioning that we've been subjected to since we were preschoolers, that this is the way the world is best organized. And if you don't have enough money to feed your family, you must have done something wrong. because these people who are super wealthy are wealthy because they are industrious. They work hard, and they have earned this money. Well, that's a narrative, and it's a lie. They have not worked any harder than anybody else, but they have put together a model and a system that allows them to extract or to appropriate or to steal the unpaid wealth that rightfully belongs to the people who work in those companies. And so that is the fundamental and primary contradiction in capitalism. It's social production. In other words, it takes hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of people to produce these products and produce this wealth. But that wealth then is stolen by the handful of people who are owners at the top, the 1%, and they put all that wealth in there. And so most people, they know something's wrong with the system. They know that this person walking out the door with a $7 million raise and everybody else praying that they have a job to come back to tomorrow, they know that something's wrong with that kind of income inequality gap. They just don't know how it gets created and why it gets maintained. So us lifting, but as egregious as that problem is, Sister Q, that's not the worst of it. And this is really what I hope to get at tonight when I say, are we ready for transformation? Us lifting us as an organization, a global movement and an organization, we take the process one critical step further. We are talking to our community and our people about our economic model, which we call New Ujamaa. And this is an economic framework that is African values-based and informed, animated, and inspired by the African values of Ma'at and the Nguza Saba. Now, there may be some people listening who are not familiar with the term Ma'at. It means truth, justice, righteousness, order, balance, harmony, and reciprocity. Most of us are familiar with the Nguza Saba. We celebrate that at Kwanzaa, and that is unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. So those values are what are at the core of us lifting us. Now, let me just lay this out, and then we'll come back and entertain questions. All economic systems perform two basic tasks for the societies in which they operate. The first task they perform is they provide the means for production and distribution of goods and services, everything from food, clothing, and shelter and energy to cars and houses and laptop computers. That's what happens in the economic sphere of all societies. This is where the material goods necessary to survive are produced. We organize our labor energy, go to work. We're either growing food or processing food. We're making clothes. We're building housing. We're making the products necessary for people to sustain their lives. That's the first task that all economic systems do. The second task, which very few people talk about, is that the economic system is also the place where the values and the philosophy of the society reside. And it is those values and philosophy that then are manifest or concretized in the society. What am I saying? Whatever the people hold to be important and valuable gets embedded in their economic system, and then it permeates every aspect of the society. It shows up in the schools. It shows up in the churches. It shows up in the family systems. It shows up in the media. It shows up in the laws and the courts and the political structures. There is no aspect of society that these values don't operate in, but they get their genesis in the economic system. So, give me, for an example, in the European mind, when they think of what is really important in their communities, they see human beings live in a world of scarcity and lack, and only the very strong survive. So for them, the following values guarantee their survival on the planet. And I want our listeners to pay close attention to these. So the first value that we find dominating in European and American culture is materialism. That is, for them, ultimate reality is material. It has to be something they can touch, feel, see, smell, taste, put their finger on, manipulate. It is got to be material. They don't trust anything that they can't see.
Okay.
The second value that they embed into everything that they do is racism. And by that, I mean the violent domination by people who classify themselves as white over people they classify as non-white for the purpose of genetic survival. Many people will recognize the teachings of Francis Cress Welsing, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, in that statement. But the idea that these people go around the globe imposing themselves on other peoples, on other cultures, on other civilizations, stealing their raw materials, stealing their labor power, and dominating their societies. That is necessary and intrinsic to how they understand and see themselves and how they operate in the world. The third value that is incredibly important to them is this individualism, this idea of the rugged individual, the Lone Ranger lifestyle, that everything that is done in the community is done for the purpose and the benefit of the individual. It's always the individual over the community. And the next value is cutthroat competition. Again, back to that survival of the fittest. So when we compete, and they want to compete about everything, the object is to destroy the opponent, to completely annihilate them, to demolish them, to take them off the planet. I mean, it's not just enough to beat them. You know, you got to wipe them out.
Right.
And wipe out their children and their children's children.
Uh-huh.
So the competition that they wage is cutthroat. And then after all of that, life still has no purpose. They say things like, he who dies with the most toys wins. So it's just there's all of this energy exerted around them staying on top of every group on the planet, but when they get on top, they really don't have anything to offer the rest of the world other than more competition, more greed, more individualism, more materialism, and the cycle just goes on and on and on. And then the last two have to do with, so they mimic what they see other people doing, and we see that classically in the United States. Every art form that African Americans have produced, from hip hop to jazz to all of the things that we have provided in this country, they have imitated it and created carbon copies of us, or I don't know what the reverse of that would be, but they imitate what they see other people doing. They do not create original works of art themselves. And then the final piece is this culture, this society, this mindset that they operate in is steeped in emotional fear and cynicism. Because there's this constant fight for survival, that you're always looking over your shoulder. You got to pack two guns and walk around with with an arsenal, and you're just waiting for someone to look at you sideways, and you go off and go ballistic. So understand that those values, those ideas, they comprise a matrix, a philosophy, and that's what we see playing out in all other aspects of the societies and the cultures where they dominate. So they naturally would have to create an economic system that allowed them to, A, be material, to be racist, to be individualistic, to be this cutthroat competition, to imitate others, to be afraid. And that is why the world, especially where they are in the majority and controlling the populations, that's why those places are so violent and dangerous to live in. That's why you have domestic abuse and violence against women and children. That's why you have rape. That's why you have wars that never end. That's why we have sickness and disease, runaway cancer and diabetes, and all of these things are preventable. But because they are operating on a thought that there is no abundance in the world, that resources are scarce, and that only the strong survive, and they have determined that they are going to survive at all costs, meaning if they have to kill everybody else, including some of their own, that's what they are determined to do. And so that, in a nutshell, is capitalist culture. Every time the cash registers ring at McDonald's, Walmart, Macy's, Amazon, any of the stores that people frequent, these values are being jackhammered into our psyche and injected into our veins, reinforced, and celebrated. So it's not even a thing where we might take the position live and let live. In these capitalist-controlled countries and cities and neighborhoods, it's all about violence. It's all about lies. It's all about keeping people distracted and keeping people afraid. Look at the 6 o'clock news. They lead with whoever got robbed, whoever got raped, whoever's missing, car accident occurred, what building burned down. It's always who got murdered. So you always get this element of fear being projected. And then mixed in the middle of that, they may say something about how the city council voted or, what debate is going on at the school board meeting. But then they switch right back to more stories of robbery. And so you come away from the 6 o'clock news feeling afraid and depressed. You don't know who to trust. Everybody's got a story, and you know they're lying because their mouths are moving. so that is their culture. Now, we are familiar with that because we live it 24/7. Now, when I said that Ulu is creating an economic model or structure based on Ma'at and the Nguza Saba, let's look at the values of Ma'at. Truth, justice, righteousness, order, balance, harmony, and reciprocity. So on the point of balance alone, there's no way that in a Ma'at economy you could have the CEO making $7 million and the average worker is only making $10 or $15 an hour. That's so far out of balance, it simply cannot be accepted. The idea of righteousness, in a Ma'at economy, the person who was making the $7 million would say, that's not right. I've got 12 houses. I can't live but in one. I've got all of this stuff, and meanwhile, this entire community is wallowing in poverty. It's not right. That's, I can't be in relationship. I can't be in right relationship with my fellow sister and brother with this kind of income gap. So the way these values operate they create a community where there is peace and harmony because people are sharing, they're giving to each other. Mm-hmm. And that takes the violence out of the equation. When everybody has enough to eat and to live, there's no need to knock somebody in the head and take their shoes.
Exactly.
But when people are don't have food, don't have adequate shelter, and they see you riding by in, you know, your Mercedes Maybach, yeah, they're ready to, you know, hurt you because they feel the injustice of that kind of inequality. Not saying that it's right, but if you want a society where there is peace, we have to bring balance. We have to bring harmony. Mm-hmm. We have to bring reciprocity. Now, going back to the second task that the economic system performs, the only way we get to these values is we have to operate the economy in a way that these values can flourish. So instead of private ownership of the businesses and the factories and the jobs, all of those places are owned by the community. So the Kroger that we shop at, or the Publix, instead of it being privately owned, it's owned by the community as a whole. So that takes this need to extract all of the wealth out of the community and put it in the hands of a few people at the top. So that wealth then is redistributed back to the entire community, so everybody has what they need. That's the difference between a cooperative society and this capitalist society that is privately owned. Because the people who are in ownership, by and large, for the most part, are these Europeans and Euro-Americans who are fearful, who are hoarding everything they get, and who are hell-bent on keeping everybody else down. The only way that we can break that cycle is we have to change our thinking to say that model only works for the 1%. It does not work for the 99% and never will, and it's getting worse. And the same thing holds true when we look at the values of the Nguza Saba: unity and self-determination, collective work and responsibility, and cooperative economics. Dr. Malana Karenga, who developed Kwanzaa as a celebration and wrote these seven principles, 1966, intentionally put in cooperative economics because he recognized that in order to practice the Nguza Saba, we had to have a cooperative economic model, a structure, a framework. And that's what ULU has been putting together for the last 7 years. The last three things, the last three values, purpose, creativity, and faith. Let me say this about African people. I was looking at some literature. One was a book called African Religions and Philosophies by John Mbidi. It's an older book. It's written in 1969, I think. But he traveled the entire continent of Africa and studied hundreds of family systems, or some would call them tribes, and concluded that everywhere he went, it was clear that Africans as a people are notoriously religious. Now, what he was talking about was not that these are church, they go to St. John's Missionary Baptist Church. You know, he wasn't talking about that. He was talking about part of their philosophical outlook. All of them recognize that there is a supreme deity that has pulled all of this together, and that this supreme being lives in everything and everyone. Mm-hmm. And so for African people, faith is second nature. Even when although this supreme deity cannot be seen or measured or touched or heard, it's not material, it's spirit. They still organized their societies in relationship to that supreme deity and behaved accordingly. That's a primary difference between an African economic model that's based on African values and a European economic model that's based on materialism. In other words, in the European and the American economic systems, they do not have any time for a God notion. Bump that. What they have,
right.
The only thing that they're focused on is material. So when
mm-hmm.
they encounter Africans talking about different deities, for them that's a joke. That's funny. They're superstitious. They're talking about their ancestors aren't dead, and you know, and they make fun of
mm-hmm.
that. All of these indigenous people, whether on the continent of Africa, or in South America or North America, these indigenous tribes, all of them had a respect for the planet. They respected
mm-hmm.
the earth, the water, the trees, and they lived in right relationship with these natural resources so that after having lived there thousands and thousands of years, the water was still clean, the air was still breathable, the soil
mm-hmm.
was rich. In other words, life flourished on the planet and in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
While after just 300 or 400 years of this insane capitalism, the oceans are overfished, the water is polluted, there's cow runoff in the drinking water, so much of the topsoil has been eroded, we're dealing with mudslides,
mm-hmm.
All of this is coming apart because these Europeans have no reverence for the planet. All they know how to do is dominate and exploit. And
mm-hmm.
so that is why when we in Ulu, when we start talking about economics, before we start talking about, well, what kind of system is it going to be, we have to ask ourselves the most important question, what values will it teach? And once we get clear on the value basis of the system that we want to build, then it becomes very clear how we organize the economics. So let me just give a quick point, and then we'll pause for some questions. The only
okay.
way African values can be operative in our communities is through a new Ujamaa cooperative economic model. Now, that's a very bold statement because I am arguing that even European socialism and communism will not work for the planet and for African people. Why? Because European socialism and European communism do not have an alternative to materialism. In other words, European socialists and communists, they don't any more believe in spirit than their capitalist cousins, brothers
right.
and sisters. They're all
mm-hmm.
materialists. Africans,
sure.
on the other hand, we start our thought about what the world is all about with spirit. And so
mm-hmm.
we do have to have an economic system that puts spirit first and foremost. There's a brother who's a member of Us Lifting Us. His name is Paul Grant. And he wrote a paper called Ifowo Sowopo Economics, which means all pulled together. And looking at this African values and African philosophy, he said that the economic system that Africans have to develop, several things have to be included. The first is the acknowledgement and the recognition that the most fundamental aspect of existence is spirit, and that this should underpin all forms of interaction within the African world. So imagine if we send our children to school and the school system doesn't say anything about spirit. Well,
no.
that would not be an African values-driven school system. We have to talk about what is ultimate reality? And to Africans, ultimate reality is spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's part of an African economic system. There would be the view that the earth is a living organic organism, which must be treated with respect. In other words, the earth is not dead. You can't just go around drilling holes in there and pulling out oil and treating it like it's not part of a living, breathing organism.
Mm-hmm.
The understanding that individuality is good and to be celebrated, and that individualism is bad and destructive of social relations. Now, this is tied to a very profound concept practiced by Africans all over the place. Some people know it as Ubuntu. I am because we are, and because, therefore, I am. In other words, we're not crazy. We recognize that there's Sister Q, there's Brother Anki, there's Brother Chewbacca. We can see these different personalities, but we also understand that Sister Q, Brother Chewbacca, Brother Anki, we do not fully understand who we are unless we are in a community. We need the community to have a full expression of our being. And so instead of us seeing ourselves above community, we see ourselves in community, and we understand that so goes the community, so goes everything and everyone in the community. So why we say individuality is good. We don't have a problem with that. But this individualism, whereas, you know, you're going to stick up the community at gunpoint and live the life that you want to live, regardless of how that affects the community, no, that's not going to fly.
Right.
Then this is the key point that I probably will pause at. The understanding that human beings are custodians, trustees, guardians of the land, and therefore that land cannot be owned, only utilized for the benefit of society. Now, when I read that, I had to kind of sit back and just marinate on that for a minute. Grant is saying that in these African societies and civilizations, this idea of private ownership of the land was totally ridiculous. First of all, how are you going to own something that you didn't produce? The land was given to the human family by this supreme being, and therefore it cannot be owned, so therefore it cannot be sold. So all this business about buying houses and flipping them for profit and all that real estate game, that is what we see in European and American culture. Because they don't respect the earth as a living being. And they have the audacity to say that they can own something that they did not put there. The Africans, the indigenous populations, had a very different idea. This land is a precious gift. We have been placed here to take care of it. We can use it and use it for the benefit of the largest number. But we cannot own it. We cannot sell it. We cannot make profit from it. That is not a practice in keeping with our understanding of this supreme being that has given all of us life. So you begin to see then that when we change the orientation of how we see the world, how we see ourselves, when we place spirit at the center of the universe, and say, okay, Spirit, how do we live on this planet together in harmony, in balance, in reciprocity? How do we do that? And we begin to treat each other because we see in each person this divine being living. In other words, I respect Sister Q because inside of Sister Q is the same supreme energy that made me. And so when I see Sister Q, I see a reflection of myself. When she sees me, she sees a reflection of herself. And both of us recognize that this energy that we're seeing inside of ourselves is this supreme intelligence that has created the universe and governs it. And so it holds us to a higher standard of behavior. And that is why, again, our economic system then must be consistent with that consciousness. We cannot put together an economic model that allows for the private ownership of the factories that pays people their salaries, their livelihoods. Mm-hmm. No, the factory has to be jointly owned by everybody that works there and including the community in which the factory sits. It's an instrument for the use of the people. They put in their labor energy. They make products that they need. The wealth that those products generate then goes back to the entire community to do the things that they need, to educate the children, to take care of the elderly, to provide health services. All of that is done once we have this different economic orientation as to the purpose of the economy as it meets the needs of our people. And the exciting thing is that as we see the increasing climate catastrophe unfolding, it's very clear that it is being driven by capitalist economic activity. In other words, the consumption of fossil fuel has created these methane gas and nitrous oxide and CO2. They're all in the atmosphere. They are preventing heat from escaping the planet. The planet is warming, and now all of the feedback loops are activating, and the cycle is getting worse and worse and worse and worse. So the water table is thrown off, and we're seeing these huge water events, huge hurricanes, tornadoes, flooding, drought in one place, flooding in the other place. And so Mother Nature herself is saying, you either fix this and get it right, or you're going to make the planet uninhabitable. So some people say, well, that's a nice theory. If we don't move in this direction within the next 7 to 10 years, we will be facing climate collapse, and that will not be a pretty sight. So what I'm trying to present here is why this idea of a new Ujamaa economic model, which is family-centered, community-owned, African values-based and driven, cooperative. And what excites me, Sister Q, is that no one else is talking about this. They're talking about things like democratic socialism, or they're definitely talking about shifting the ownership of the means of production from private ownership to group ownership. They are talking about that, but there's still this idea of this fight, that this has got to be this violent revolution. We've got to overthrow the bourgeoisie and let the proletariat rise up, and we're going to institute this dictatorship of the proletariat. All of that language is war language, and it's just more of the same, this killing and devastation. The Ma'at and Nduzo Saba-driven system is not based on warring against, it's based on acknowledging that there's this divine presence that lives within each of us, and that the way we honor that is by loving one another. I say that for last because, you know, people want to fight. You know, we want to hate. You know, we want to go upside somebody's head. We going to get some revenge, some payback. But you know, the technology is so advanced at this point that we live in a world that is in instant communication with everybody on the planet via the cell phone and other forms of technology. And these world wars and the possibility of using nuclear weapons, I mean, if that doesn't scare the pants off of you, nothing will. That is simply not a viable solution for the human family going forward.
Right.
And people who are beating their chests and, you know, making war statements and all of this violent rhetoric, that's people who are fearful because they don't have a relationship with the energy that created the planet. We do.
Mm-hmm.
And we must
For sure.
step forward. Seize this moment given to us by the ancestors to redirect the direction that the planet is moving in. And so
mm-hmm.
that is what us lifting us is presenting to ourselves. And going back to your earlier statement when we first started the conversation, Sister Q, it's because we are afraid of what will happen when we start saying this is what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
We really don't have a choice. If we love our children and we want to leave them a legacy and a planet in which to live, this is something that we simply must do. And we have the resources to do it. This is not it's not Mission Impossible. It's quite possible, as a matter of fact. So let me pause because we do need to say something about the ULU convention that's coming up tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay, Brother Amti, we have a hand up. Can we take this question or comment
Absolutely.
First and then talk
yep.
about the convention?
Yep, let's do that.
Okay. Caller with the last four digits, 8858. Please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment, or ask your question. Thank you.
Hey, Tep. Well, peace.
Peace.
My name is Larry Wilson, or Nefertim Ur, calling from South Korea. I just wanted to make a comment. So my comment is, well, first of all, great conversation. And I'd like to suggest that in addition to reading Dr. Karenga's books, Paul E. Fiume's, that we also read books by Dr. Muwatta Ashby, especially the one on ancient Egyptian economics, and come up with a collective solution to our objectives or goals. Thank you for taking my call. Have a great day.
Thank you for calling in. Thank you.
Yeah, catch up, brother. Appreciate that comment and that call. As a matter of fact, we are very familiar with Brother Muwatta Ashby's writings. And the comedic yoga is one of the disciplines that brings us to a place where this consciousness is front and center in our psyche. To your point earlier, Sister Q, this transformation, the way that it comes about is when we cultivate, when we intentionally cultivate these values into our minds. Dr. Muwatta Ashby, for example, presents a system linking body, mind, and spirit through comedic yoga that is an excellent vehicle for raising this level of consciousness because it does require a higher level of consciousness to practice these values.
For sure.
And unfortunately, most of us have only been inculcated with European ideas about how human beings interact with each other. We know how to fight. We know how to cuss and how to hate and be jealous and envious. But in terms of how to be a completely unified being and to understand that we all are in relationship with each other and with nature itself, that requires some mechanisms to help us get there. And so I support the brother for the comment. The writings, and there are many of them, 70-plus books, I'm sure, and counting, offer both in terms of diet, in terms of comedic yoga, in terms of religion and understanding African religion, all of that. Again, thank you, brother, for your comment.
We have no more hands up.
Okay. So the conference is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. For everyone that's on the call, it's still not too late. If you are an ULU member and you're listening, it's $35 to register. We hope that you have your dues are current. We are excited and looking forward to Brother Kwame Kalamara, who's on faculty at Spelman, a longtime political activist and professor who has done extensive reading and writing in the field of African liberation and African sovereignty. And his presentation is Sankofa Forever. And so he's going to help us look back, gather up these truths and these principles that sustained African civilizations for tens of thousands of years, and how do we apply that in the 21st century. It's going to be a powerful presentation, and we hope that those on the call will tune in and be a part of the sharing. And then we'll have a question and answer period following that. The theme of this year's conference is Recommit, Reconnect, and Renew, an ULU transformation for the present and future. And that's what we're talking about, this transformation, this ability to open our eyes and see how we can move forward into a new economic paradigm that allows us to live in harmony and peace. And in order to get to that awakening, to see the need for this new economic paradigm, we have to undergo this transformation, this personal and human transformation of our psyches. Because once this idea of a liberated and sovereign people takes root in our minds, then it will be a very short walk to start creating the institutions to support that consciousness. Saturday is our business session and educational piece, and we invite you to come for that. And then on Sunday, we'll be doing the practical application of this. How do we build intentional land-based communities that carry these values and can begin to inseminate them in the communities where we are? A powerful presentation by the founder of Us Lifting Us, Baba Hekima, and they don't want to miss that. So again, that's this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, March 10th, 11th, and 12th. We invite everyone to go to the website. The registration information is on the website. Again, it's not too late. We hope that you will do that. We need your energy. This is not a Lone Ranger project. It takes a village to raise a people out of the quagmire that these various oppressive forces have held us in for way too long. Once we change our minds, we will make the other changes necessary. And so get in the process with us. Join hands with us and do the work so that we can leave this institution, this economic institution, for our children and for generations to follow. That's all that I have, Sister Q.
Well, that's quite a bit. We thank you for that. As always, you bring very good information that we can use and apply daily, you know, not just, as you said, we have to internalize all of the Ma'at and the Nguza Saba and make it part of our, who we are. And then we can create the economic system that reflects us. And I think the more we do that, the less comfortable we feel in the any other system. My friends have said, our spirit rebels against that kind of stuff because
it really does.
We recognize it's not, it doesn't, it's, I guess it makes war on us when we're trying to be at peace, is a way to say that. So thank you again for that, brother.
Thank you.
And we want to thank everyone that joined us this evening. We'd like to invite you to join us again next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock for another installment of Dare to Move.